board to have them approve it so we can bring those programs to our students. And that's what we did last year, is kind of discuss some of the programs that were options. So we're gonna move on to our SHAC members. So I know there were just a lot of questions about who was a SHAC member last year. Again, that's been a while back, so we'd have to go back and look at our sign-in sheets. But as you can see, it should be comprised or representative of your community. But what I will note, that one of the requirements of the School Health Advisory Council is the majority of the members have to be made up of parents of currently enrolled BISD students. So that is a requirement, not a school district policy, but one provided by Texas Education Code and part of our outlines or guidelines for the SHAC, okay? So as you'll see in the picture, or even in that list, you have your community members that might look like local law enforcement agencies. Many of you are some of our community members. And then even our health services outside of the district. So sometimes we might have representatives from the Children's Advocacy Center. I'm trying to think of some of CPS or Child Protective Services. And again, I didn't get a chance to thank you for being here today. You heard us mention that we think there were about 4 or 5 members at our last meeting of last year. And we've far exceeded even our last meet, our last year's first meeting. We had a somewhat good turnout, but not like the one that we had today. And so just to give you a little bit of context, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute, is one of our goals as part of the Health Services Department and as part of the director who supports the Health Services Department was really trying to increase our parent engagement and our parent representation within the SHAC. So again, we thank everybody for being here because we know everyone's time is precious. And sometimes we have those long days and on our way home we're like, do I really wanna go? So I get it, we're all tired sometimes, but we really do appreciate it. And don't mind our technical or our technology. This room isn't always the best to set up large groups in, but we have a lot of different sessions going on today. So I've done enough talking, and I don't like reading from presentations, so just take about 10 seconds to read through the characteristics of a School Health Advisory Council member, please. And so as we move forward with our discussion today, and even the remaining minimum of 3 more meetings that we will have, is try to keep these at the forefront or in your mind. Sometimes some of the topics that we discuss are very personal to us because we're talking about the health and well-being of not only the students that we serve, but also the community that we serve. So we're gonna have varying opinions in here, and that's okay. But we also want to have mutual respect for each other. And then Tanya mentioned as one of our commitments to be a good listener as well. So what are the member roles and responsibilities? I would say, or probably the top one, and it is the first one on there, is taking a whole school, community, and child approach as it relates to health and learning. And I just said that I don't like reading from the screen because anyone can do that. I could hand over a presentation to you and you could read through those bullet points on your own. But I do think it's important for us to be clear on what our roles and responsibilities are as a member of this team. So we're gonna talk over health-related issues. Again, that could be things like substance abuse, even human sexuality. So like I said, some sensitive topics. And we may, once we identify some areas of health concerns or areas that maybe we can do better at as a district, we may explore some programs. And Tanya mentioned the NEST program a few minutes ago. And again, we'll talk about that when we review our last year accomplishments and what we were focused on. We also may need to make recommendations to the school board. And then depending sometimes on what programs we are looking at, those programs usually require some sort of cost. So as part of the shack, we would have to explore how could we offset the cost, what money do we have available to us as a district, how could we potentially offset that. So the shack is a very important committee within the district. That last bullet point under the roles, we want to promote school health coordination even within our community. So again, I've kind of talked about what we may do as a team or as a group, but also part of that is maybe reaching out to some of our community organizations, being present out in the community, or maybe asking them to come in when we're doing some of our district-wide events like Back to School Bash. That's typically one of our greatest attended events that we host within the district. So maybe reaching out to some of our community partners, inviting them to come in. Just off the top of my head, and to give you an example, one of the things that we've thought about trying to offer at Back to School Bash is like an immunization clinic. So many of our students sometimes come to us without the appropriate immunizations that are required. And so this would be a way to offer that prior to the start of the school year to make sure everyone's in compliance. And that might be something that we discuss as a group of how could we help promote that within our district. So then I'm gonna switch over to the responsibilities. So every single one of you, even within that Quick Connect activity, when we were talking about the scariest thing that we do for fun, and you gave a little bit of insight as to why you're sitting here, I think we all have a shared interest or a common goal that we're here because of our youth and the students that we serve, mm-hmm. and your own children within the district. We also need to have an awareness of the community, so that's why one of the recommendations of the SHAC is inviting other agencies or organizations to the table to help troubleshoot or brainstorm ideas. And then I'm assuming, because I can kind of tell from everybody, that we also want to commit ourselves to positive school health and programs. By signing up or filling out that application, you also said you would commit, hopefully, to 4 meetings within the school year. So this is meeting number 1. You can check that one off. And so we have 3 more to go. That's not to say that we might have more than 4. But the minimum is to have 4 within a school year. And again, it all kind of goes back to what we identify as our priorities and goals and the amount of time that might take us to explore some of those programs. Or if we need to make recommendations to our board, we may need to have additional meetings. The other thing is we may have subcommittees. So the SHAC does allow that. One of the subcommittees that is probably the most common one for any SHAC in a school district is on the PE side, because the SHAC does make recommendations for the PE curriculum, the scheduling of it, and the amount of minutes that students are to participate during a school day or a school week. And then we want to make decisions that serve the entire community. So again, some sensitive topics maybe that we may talk about, but trying to keep an open mind, trying to remain as neutral as possible, because ultimately at the end of the day, it's not what's best about me, Laura Baker, the Director of Student Services, because I come to the table with my own opinions and thoughts, but really what's in the best interest of the students that we serve within our district. I do want to pause right there real quick, because I want to introduce someone. I don't want to put her on the spot. But Ms. Bailey, will you, real quick, we did a Quick Connect activity earlier. Do you mind introducing yourself? I believe you're sitting here as a parent. And then what is the scariest thing that you have ever done for fun?
Hi, my name is Xiomara Gomez, and I have 2 kids, one to Hennessy's High School. And my daughter's middle school, Bachelor Middle School.
Okay.
Yeah. Es la cosa más emocionante que te ha causado más miedo, que hayas hecho por diversión, que te haya causado mucho miedo.
I don't know.
So I tend to have a lot of those in my area. Okay, so I'm going to hand it back over to Tanya so she can talk a little bit about where we were at last year.
All right. So last year we were trying to increase our parent and community participation. And what we did is we had an application process, which brought you here today, which you filled out to say kind of what your role is, are you a parent, community member, what do you bring into the table. So as Laura mentioned, the majority of our members are to be parents. Yes, we need, that is a requirement, like she said, by the, not by BISD, but the SHAC requirement. So that application process helped us really have a nice, wonderful crowd here today. Then we explored some different health curriculum that we could provide for our students. We did have a lower attendance toward the end of our meetings last year, so we did review some, but we didn't pick one because we wanted to have a more representation of the community. So we did review some though. And today's purpose is kind of go over the SHAC meeting, what are the roles and responsibilities and things like that, kind of bring us all together, not to overwhelm our new people, but kind of bring you up to speed with what we're going to be covering. We did provide some internet safety to our teachers, digital citizenship lessons to all of our teachers for all grade levels, and we want to enhance that, what we already currently have, just move forward with that. So we'll probably be discussing more of that in future meetings. And that was put together by our student services group and our digital learning teams. So next.
Yeah, so we, as I mentioned earlier, one of our goals last year was to increase the parent and the community involvement. We did that, so we can check that one off. And then the next thing we wanted to do was explore some of the health education curriculum. And when we say explore, I want everyone to keep that in mind. Not necessarily make a decision, but what's available out there. But even prior to that, what are the health-related needs of the students in our district and what's out there that we could maybe tap into or utilize that would help address some of those areas of concern. So we definitely did a lot of exploration because there were, you know, basically if you Google something, you're going to get an answer or maybe 20 of them. So there's a lot of resources out there, but what resources are evidence-based, research-based, have been shown to truly move that needle towards improvement versus I had this great idea and, you know, it's not really validated or vetted through a recognized agency. So again, thinking about explore. So we did that one. And then the drug prevention education, and we'll kind of talk about this in a minute because there was a lot of data review that the SHAC members did last year to identify some of the areas of concern that were health related. And you have probably seen on the news, unfortunately, like I think we're all aware that there's an opioid crisis.
Yes.
Across the United States, but even in our neighboring district of Hayes ISD, and unfortunately they've lost a lot of students and community members from fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
I will say real quick that we recently trained our campus principals and our campus assistant principals on how to administer Narcan. And Narcan is what you give to someone who's overdosing from fentanyl. Our not everyone in here might be aware, Bastrop ISD has our own in-house police department. And so our officers are also trained. They carry Narcan on them and also keep it in their vehicle, secured in the trunk. I'll come right back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then our nurses are trained as well. And so we're in the very early stages of Narcan administration and then also addressing the fentanyl. And we were actually going to dive a little bit deeper into it this evening, but once again, we wanted to focus on the roles and responsibilities and the purpose as to why we're here before we really start diving into some of those other topics. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for waiting.
Principals, police.
Assistant principals.
Assistant principals. What about teachers?
So, like I said, we're in the early stages, and we're not declaring for each campus who's going to be trained yet. So that's part of the discussion, because it's not only the student services department, it's not only health services. We also need to bring in our administrators. We also need to bring in either our chief of police or one of his officers and talk about who needs to be trained. Also, how are we going to purchase the Narcan? Some agencies provide it for free, others, or some agencies that did prior to are no longer providing it for free. So that may be something that we look into. I'll come right back to both of y'all. Even when we were training principals, a lot of questions came up about, our staff that takes students off campus for like either field trips or UIL activities, sporting events, band events, they will need access to it and need to be trained. So really we wanted to not withhold the training for certain people that needed access to it right now. But as far as district-wide, we're working on that.
And were they trained on how to give the Narcan, or were they also trained on identification of drug use and Narcan?
Both.
How to
monitor for signs and symptoms of possibly overdosing or overdosing, and then also administering the Narcan. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Go ahead, Lori.
First, I was going to say that I went to a conference and they talked about this from a school that did have a death from that. Mm-hmm. And they were talking that even if you give somebody, the Narcan,
right,
and they're not, it's not going to hurt the person.
Correct.
So there's not, there's no liability that if you were to administer it and then they were sick from something else, it's not going to hurt
right.
them.
Right.
So as an educator and a teacher on campus too, I was going to ask, if we were able to get our own dose, because you can't order your own
right.
free dose.
And you can go to the pharmacy.
Right. Are we allowed to carry on our own without the district having our own in case something were to happen? Or would we be held to have to contact the nurse to?
So that's part of what we're having to look at. So the opioid crisis has kind of been simmering out there for a while, right? And it's not getting any better. But our district or our health-related policy doesn't specifically say this is how the district is going to respond to fentanyl overdoses. So we have to go back, review our current policy and see what it says, and then make a proposal probably for, once we make those considerations, who needs to be trained, how are they going to get trained, who's going to provide that training, how often are we going to require the training, and if someone, would we allow a staff member to carry their own? Those are all things that we have kind of on the burner for now. And that's why I said there may be, just putting it out there, because we didn't plan on talking about this in too much detail. But one of the things that I can do is the presentation, I will link that in the Google Calendar invite that each one of y'all received. And then for now that we are all here together, then I will send out, or Tanya will send out, the Google Calendar invites for the remainder of the three. And we're going to talk about that here in a little bit as well. But the presentation is required to be posted on the district website, so we will be posting this on the website, but then you all will have access to it too, because we can link it within that Google Calendar and even share it out with you via email. But what we could do is maybe in preparation preparation for the next meeting is as part of pre-work instead of homework, is sharing the fentanyl presentation that Tanya and Garland both developed for administrators. And we did pull some of the resources from Hayes ISD. I recently sat in on a webinar hosted by the Department of Education, and they actually had a nonprofit organization there, which unfortunately the founder was a parent of someone who had lost a child to an overdose, and then there was also someone from DEA there as well. We've discussed, and again, early stages, we'll try to answer questions if there are any, but I may not have the answer quite yet. That may be one of the subcommittees that we look at forming for the SHAC, is to look at substance abuse and how we respond specifically to fentanyl or opioid overdoses. And then some of that work may carry over into the summer, because like I said, it's going to involve our social workers, our health services department, police department, things like that. Okay. All great questions. Yes, ma'am.
So is BASD has a drug prevention program, or do you need to implement a drug prevention program?
So that's one of the things that we talked about, again, early stages, but if we either have a subcommittee of the SHAC or some sort of task force.
So there's no program right now?
Not a specific drug awareness program yet. The ones that we have explored, and even through our own police department, so like you have the DARE program, right, that most people are familiar with, maybe just me, I don't know, it might depend on the age and all of that, but when, you know, in elementary school, they funnel you into the cafeteria, you'd see like McGruff the Crime Dog and DARE. DARE is still a very active program, and they use it a lot in Houston. Houston has a lot more resources than we do. The other thing about the DARE program is, in order to be considered, you have to have a facilitator and someone trained in the DARE program to be able to say that we're a DARE district. And so that's hard to come by in this area. Yes, ma'am.
Because it is a big concern.
Correct.
You know, because of my job, mm-hmm. I get to talk to a lot of the mamas signing to our classes. Mm-hmm. And just last month, three students, 13, 14. One was 13 to 14 mm-hmm. with problems with drug abuse.
Yes.
Here.
Yes. And we see it in our district quite a bit with THC use in the vaping, because it's so easy to access and it's easy to hide. And they're becoming pretty savvy with those devices as well. They're even developing one that looks like a smartwatch. So it looks like an Apple Watch, but it's actually a vape.
Fire detectors, mm-hmm. they're vape detectors.
Yes.
So if they're vaping,
right, it'll send them an alarm. So right now we don't have a declared drug prevention program. The ones that we have looked at, either our chief of police would have to send his officers to that to become certified, and then our police department has grown because our board is supportive of our police department. But it's okay, I can maybe get X amount trained, like two or three, but then look at the amount of campuses that we have, and those officers, like if something else comes up, they have to make that their priority, even though they believe in community policing and establishing those relationships with students. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, because we did look at some, but it may be something, again, as our subcommittee, because there's a lot of free resources out there. And curriculum, even from DEA or the Drug Enforcement Agency that they developed, that are made for schools. But I just found out about that like a week ago. So, yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, as a former health teacher, mm-hmm. It used to be covered in our health,
right.
But we no longer have health in
correct.
Middle school or high school.
Correct.
So we've taken that out, where we used to give, every kid was required to take health. Now that's not a requirement, mm-hmm. we don't even offer it anymore.
Right.
So we've taken out some of the systems we had in place mm-hmm. to work with our kids in all these areas, and that's one of the reasons I'm
trying. And just so you know, students aren't required to have a health credit to graduate.
No.
So then, right, that's what I just said.
Sorry.
Yeah. So then that's part of the reason why the district chose to remove the health programs, because it's not a graduation requirement any longer. Yes, ma'am.
It is part of the PE teams, though.
Yes,
so
it is for the young
philanthropy, but we started it there. And it's a little touchier there, right? Like getting into it, so it was like very service level, but you know, maybe we could look at pushing it more into the PE class.
Yes, and we've talked about some of those, but again, more to come as we continue to discuss. Okay, so I just kind of put, not the minus sign, but like that's still in the works. So again, we explored these things, but we probably need to dive a little bit deeper because also when you think about it, the drug prevention, a lot of it might be directly related to like true marijuana or cannabis use and not so much THC. Because THC is a newer product, there's not a lot of research out there, so the prevention programs that you do see oftentimes don't directly address the THC component. So something else to keep in mind. And then incorporating internet safety for all, Tanya mentioned, what we did offer is through the Student Services Department and our Curriculum and Instruction Department, they have the digital learning team, so they oversee all of the digital platforms that either our teachers or our students access. And so what they helped us do is write some lessons for teacher lessons for citizenship, so technology citizenship or how to navigate safely when you're at school. And those lessons were provided at the start of the school year as part of the social emotional learning year at Lance. So all grade levels did get that. And then some campuses, like after a long break or if they were seeing issues related to students not utilizing district provided technology appropriately, then they may reteach some of those lessons. But again, something to look at even a little bit more probably because technology is in everybody's hands and for long periods of time as well. And not just at school, but outside of school.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so we're gonna talk about some of the accomplishments again for last school year. We got together to provide a mission statement for the SHAC and a vision statement for the SHAC. And what we did is we kind of broke that into teams last school year, and each little group wrote down what they felt like would be a good mission statement, a vision statement for our SHAC, and then those were voted upon, and what you see on the screen is the ones that were chosen. Are you able to see them, or would you like me to read them?
No, we can.
You can see them?
Okay.
All right, and then we had four meetings, which was great. Mm-hmm. We did work on our SHAC officers, but we weren't able to fill all the positions. So we're going to relook at that this school year. During these meetings, we'll reevaluate what those roles are, what the responsibilities of those roles are, and elect officers. We talked about our SHAC priorities. We looked at different data. We noticed that, as you mentioned, that the drug alcohol situation needs to be addressed. So we looked at the data for that with the discipline, and we were looking at just different things, how to address that. And then we also got some data from our Children's Advocacy Center, kind of different reports on what Bastrop looks like as far as reporting goes, what kind of things they're seeing, counseling on, those kind of things. So, and then we are trying to get some information out to the teachers, how to accept or welcome children into their classroom and how to respond to them when they had to experience some kind of trauma or family emergency.
Not to interrupt you, but
sure.
Can you maybe briefly provide just a brief overview of what the Children's Advocacy Center does, or the CAC, like some of the things that they do?
So they're, I don't know where Bassano's, the restaurant, the donut shop, there's where they're located. They have a new office. They got out of the little yellow house on Main Street, and their bigger office provides them more space to take in families, have counseling, therapy sessions. So they're nonprofits, so they do a lot of fundraisers to get money to provide those services to the families for free. So they get reports of abuse or neglect or things like that, and then CPS investigates, but then the Children's Advocacy Center helps advocate for the families and the
secure housing sometimes, I think, they hopefully.
Bless you. So yeah, very, very good program. And Megan is the director at the Children's Advocacy Center, and she would have been here tonight, but they're having a meeting over there as well. So she couldn't be in both places at once. Mm-hmm. So that's where she is. And she could provide a lot more information. So in looking at the data, both from the CAC and also from our discipline, we were developing what do we want to be our priorities for addressing as a SHAC. Our bylaws, they are in the draft form currently, and they are needing to be approved by cabinet and by our superintendent. So we're kind of, those are kind of just waiting to be approved. And then we discussed Senate Bill 9. Senate Bill 9 is a Senate bill that says that we are to provide or
expose
our students to education that addresses child abuse, family violence, dating violence, and sex trafficking. So we have to provide that at least once to, or expose once in middle school and once in high school. So just to help our children stay safe. And that's one of the things that NEST, the program that you see that we discussed at our last meeting, that's one of the programs that we were looking at to see if that might be a good fit to address all of those issues. And Senate Bill 9 has different requirements, and NEST met a lot of those requirements. However, we may look at stuff that we already have and already purchased within our district that might as well meet those requirements. So
so that was part of going back through that explore different programs that might address some of those health-related concerns that we have. So Tanya just talked about, and we have about 20 minutes left, so I'm going to try to keep us on time. Some of those data components, like she said, we reviewed like our discipline data, so our drug-related offenses. The Children's Advocacy Center brought in some of their data, and they actually provided a comparison like with some of our surrounding counties too, so we could see like the number of calls that they received maybe about child abuse or sexual abuse and what services they were providing in the different counties and areas and how we compared to those. So a lot of children counseling in response to an unhealthy environment in the home life. So either child abuse or the child witnessing one of the other families being abused. So when you think about that child is being exposed to trauma. So that's what she was mentioning, is maybe more training for our staff on when those students come back to us. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes maybe even the very next morning, even though the police just left their house at 2 a.m. and they were able to secure, you know, a hotel or at the shelter by 3 o'clock in the morning, so they've only had a couple hours of sleep. We may not know, because we may not have an educational need to know what the student went through that night before, but more of an awareness of how can we monitor or kind of gauge our students. I like to refer to it as like taking a temperature. And if we notice things like a child or a student has their head down on the desk, well, maybe it's something more than they're just not wanting to participate in the work, right? So that's what the SHAC did last year, is looked at different data components that helped to identify some areas at that time which looked like a priority. And then, again, we started looking at different programs, but nothing was solidified because that very last meeting, like we said, it was a very small group, and we really wanted it to be presented to a team that is more representative of our community.
Okay. So our goals for this school year, determine SHAC members, which we done through our application process. Then also determine our SHAC officers. We said we'll discuss that further. We'll discuss what the positions are and what the roles and responsibilities are of those positions. A drug prevention program. I like some of you are just taking notes on all this information. So hopefully, like you mentioned, that there may be a subcommittee of the SHAC who can really hone in on the drug prevention component. We need to address the Senate Bill 9 education program. What avenue do we want to use to get that information out to our students? And then, depending on where we're at, our status, we will need to make a proposal to our board according to what we decide as a SHAC. Because whatever we agree upon, we have to propose it to the board, and the board ultimately decides whether or not that is what they will accept or what we can move forward with.
All right, so our proposed meeting dates. Again, we'll share out calendar invites for these, so you'll see a pattern there, Tuesday nights. If there are any conflicts or you think, because I know things can't come up. I think pretty much everyone in here said that they have children or have a child possibly living with them. So things come up, so we know that there's conflicts. But if you're not able to make any of the dates, please reach out to Tanya and or me, but mainly Tanya. She is, as part of our bylaws and our district, she is the designated chair, but one of the elected members would be a co-chair, okay? So she is our designated chair for the SHAC. So please keep her in the loop if you're not able to come to one or more than one of the meetings. Because again, we wanna keep this momentum going. We can get a lot more work done when we have you guys here with us, as opposed to maybe a couple of people, and those two people happen to already work for the district. Because then we're not hearing community voice and we're not hearing parent or family voice. Yes, ma'am.
So we are members?
Yes.
Of the SHAC?
Yes.
And
you should have received the
yes,
welcome
I did.
Letter.
And
okay.
So that means that now we are forming a committee, mm-hmm. council. And what happens if I miss one meeting?
You won't be, you'll be allowed to continue to participate. So it's not like denied, you don't get to come back. But again, that's why I said we understand that sometimes, like Tanya mentioned, Megan, who works for the Children's Advocacy Center, she's normally at all of our meetings, but again, she had a CAC meeting, so she couldn't attend here, but she communicated that to Tanya, we're aware of it. But really what we do need is that commitment to the four meetings.
So we have to come to the four meetings.
Yes.
How many members do you have?
What you see in the room, and I believe there was one person that I think reached out that wasn't able to make it tonight.
So mm-hmm. how many, 20?
It's 26,
okay.
I believe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was close to 30.
Okay.
Close to 26, but again, the majority of those members have to be a parent of a currently enrolled BISD
I see.
Student.
I see. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I was just wondering if attendance by Zoom is a possibility at all.
It is.
If you can't make it.
It is. We had to do some of that last year just for various reasons. And like we said, our NEST representative actually was virtual when she was presenting on the NEST program. And I think we actually had someone also participating virtually as well. So if you can't make it in person for whatever reason, again, communicate that out. The more we know, the more we can help try to troubleshoot so you can participate, even if it's maybe not for the whole meeting, but for the time that you can. Because we do have employees of the district in the room as well, so they may have a faculty meeting or a staff meeting afterwards. So we'll try to make it work if we can make it work.
So I was just gonna ask, if there were enough people that couldn't make a meeting, would you consider changing the date?
Possibly, there's the logistics side of it as well. Like we've already reserved the space ahead of time, and all of the other spaces were already booked, and even at some of our off-site locations, it's obviously we're a district of growth, and I'm sure most people know that we're building additional campuses, but we're honestly bursting at the seams up here, and that's one of the challenges that being at the service center, a lot of times it's hard to find a location to meet, and so we've already reserved the spots, but not to say that it couldn't happen. It's just, it would depend. Yes, ma'am. I'll come back to you. Let me grab her first. Sorry. Go ahead.
I guess I'm confused. I thought I heard you say
said that y'all only met once last year.
No, we met 4 times last year.
Okay.
But by our last meeting, the participants or the number of members that were coming to the meetings had dwindled. So we did meet 4 times.
Wow, y'all did a lot in one
meeting. She's like, wow, y'all are on a mission. I wish I was that efficient.
So this is actually the second meeting.
No, this is the first one.
This is the first one.
For the school year.
Why would we wait so long to have our first meeting?
So part of what we heard earlier was that the dwindling participation last year, and then also we are in the process of revitalizing our shack. So last year wasn't the first school year to where participation was low. It's been historically like that. And also last year, if we broke down each one of those meetings, the majority of people that were in those meetings were district employees, not parents. Mm-hmm. So technically we were out of compliance, not to the fault of our own, because we did offer for parents to come, but that's one of those things that you have to think about. And so as part of the revitalization, we did a lot of research, looked at other districts. What are you guys doing to help increase that parent and family participation? And so one of them truly is like the application process, because that allows us to be able to see, okay, we have X amount of parents that are applying, but the majority of the, or maybe the majority of the submissions are from our own district employees. So how can we work to promote the shack and get that out there so we do have more parent participation? So it's not quite starting from scratch, but a lot of the work we started last year that's continuing into this year is almost like starting from scratch. So that's why we were, you know, say we're revitalizing it. Because again, like, I'm so happy to see this group.
Yes.
I can't take, like, not only these ladies too, it's a team effort, and many of you in the room too, from reaching out to other parents and families that you work with and know of. And I would say that, like, Lori, I know you probably talk to families quite a bit. If you know of someone that, a family or a parent that you think would be interested, please reach out to Tanya or I. Ms. Bailey, same thing for you. Same things like Special Olympics. Special Olympics is dear to my heart. I was a special ed teacher and participated a lot with Special Olympics. So if you have families that you know of, please let us know and we can send them the application form. So that's really why. So we did have 4 meetings, but again, our first one, I want to say we had anywhere from 10 to 15 people show up, majority being employees. The next highest number was community representation, and then parents.
See, it seems like we've lost almost a whole year since this is our first meeting, so we kind of have catch up.
We do.
So if we could consider next year and really get on the ball and be able to start next
right.
year at the beginning of the year.
Right, and that's part of where the bylaws come in. So the bylaws are written for one, to how are we going to either recommend or vote on the council, like the co-chair, the secretary, things like that, or are they going to be designated? What is the commitment? Is it going to be 20 years? Is it going to be 2 years? So y'all aren't committed to 20. You're not committed to 20. Most likely 2 years is what we're asking, because, to move the work forward, you do need that commitment, and it needs to be more than just 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 meetings. So I agree with everything you're saying.
Sometimes their kids age out.
That's true. Yes. 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 Yes, ma'am.
So is there anything? You're dealing on a school year as opposed to a fiscal year,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you also mentioned that by law it's 4 meetings, but it could be more.
It could be.
Have you
it's
considered
a minimum.
Making it maybe 6 and starting in August, September when school starts?
We could.
And then
we could
have more meetings, because these are kind of bunched together because
right.
they're so far into the end of the school year.
Correct.
And I can see where June 13th
mm-hmm.
might be a problem because people go on vacation.
Right.
You know, and kids
right.
get out. I don't know about y'all get out in May.
I work year round.
Well,
we get out in May.
And I forgot. I'm sorry. Let me come back to you because I forgot to come
no,
to
I,
you
I,
next.
I might have missed it, but these are at 5 o'clock and they're going to
run generally to about?
4:45, so I'll ask. We did 4:45 again to some of our community partners that are in the community. They can get here by 4:45, our employees that are part of our shack. That way it's not such a long gap between getting off of work and then going home. But if 5 o'clock, like as a group, if that's something that we need to consider, we could definitely do that. But 4:45 is kind of where we traditionally have started.
About an hour-ish?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yeah. So yes, all of the things that you said, the minimum is 4 meetings. And it does say, I looked, I found it in one area where it said those 4 meetings should be during the actual school year and not go over into like the summer or before. But that doesn't mean that you can't have additional meetings. And then I also mentioned the subcommittees. So those subcommittees might be meeting outside of these 4.
Right.
This is like whole group.
Right.
So there could be additional meetings.
Lori, you said I'll come back.
Well, I was just curious if anything we're going to do now, is this getting proposed for next school year, or is that not enough time to get anything on the
agenda? No, we could definitely make recommendations for next school year.
Okay, I wasn't sure if this is enough time to.
Yes.
So the programs for this year, are they being carried on from the previous year?
So remember, we were exploring programs. We didn't solidify anything because we had a dwindling.
So you've never had programs to supplement
teeth? Correct. Yep. Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
I guess my question is, like, some feedbacks off of hers, because I know SB9 was passed in 2020, which
right.
was pretty exciting because they really hadn't come out with anything new in
right.
forever since I was probably in school. Is there not a legal requirement as to when you actually implement that?
Yes. So Senate Bill 9, some of those things are by the end of this school year. So there are some components from the other resources that we currently have in district that do address Senate Bill 9. But as far as us like declaring this is what we're going to utilize to be in compliance to Senate Bill 9, that's still part of the conversation. And there's not a whole, like, part two to the Senate Bill 9
right.
was districts were also supposed to receive, like, more guidance
right.
About the requirements of Senate Bill 9, and not a whole lot. So it's really just kind of left up to the district. Here's what you have to do, and then here's how you're going to have to figure it out. But I do want to say, like, the substance abuse, we do have some things in district that, like if a student was caught with THC and they get assigned to our DAP, our district alternative placement, they are assigned like online modules for substance abuse. And we also have a partnership with Bluebonnet Trails to where they're going to start coming in and they'll do a screening with the students to see kind of like an intake to see if they're eligible for the cannabis program. So we do have some things out there that address Senate Bill 9 or would help us meet those requirements. And so I think all of us in here, and I'm gonna speak for Tanya and Garland too, is we just don't want it to be the compliance part where we're just checking it off,
right.
like, yeah, we're doing it, da da da.
Right, meaning what does our
yes.
community and district actually need.
Correct, and making it
truly
meaningful and looking at the big picture. Yes,
ma'am. So what about new agenda items? Can we propose discussions for those?
Yeah, so what we wanted to do tonight was just go over the roles and responsibilities and the purpose of the shack, because as you can see, we have a lot of new members in here. So starting with that, like, why am I here and what is our purpose? So I hope we were able to establish that for everybody. And then what we'll do is the next time we meet, and like I said, we can send some pre-workout or some preview items of like the fentanyl presentation that the nurses trained our administrators on. We can share that with you so you can preview it before we meet next time. And then, yeah, if you have some agenda items that you would like for us to consider, send those to Tanya, and then we can definitely review that and see, and also look to see, are there any trends and patterns that we're seeing from you guys as far as recommendations to talk about. So that's part of what this is a collaborative group to, again, look at the needs of our students, our community, and then how can we work together to respond to some of those? And who can we tap into to help us? Yes, sir.
I have a question. You said y'all trained them on how to give Narcan. Just out of curiosity, was part of the training how to manage the person after giving it?
Yes.
Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
So if you give it, then you roll them on their side, their recovery position, just because, yeah, so we went over that. And then if they don't respond 2 to 3 minutes later, you give another dose.
The other, that's a great question, and I didn't mean to cut you off. The other thing that they trained, because it was Tanya and Garland that actually did the training. But one of the things that they talked about is similar to CPR, is I need for you to call 911. So identifying someone and having someone with you that can sit there and take like the timeline of events or take notes. So that's covered. And then, so while they're, or when they're in the process of administering Narcan and monitoring the individual, because it may not be a student, it could be a staff member that happens to get exposed to it, but someone is calling for emergency services, so that's happening in addition to administering and monitoring the Narcan administration.
And it's just, I asked, I was a paramedic. I was a paramedic for multiple years.
Great to know.
Somebody given Narcan over 100 times, lots of different people respond in different ways.
Yes,
yeah.
And if you watch some of the, I know I've watched some of the videos too of like true Narcan administration, and it's stressful, and I don't tend to like get very anxious like that, but when I watch them, it's sometimes hard to watch.
But we are in a new legislative session.
Correct.
So there may be things that come up.
You're right.
That are against things that we're deciding to do, so we need to be aware also of which bills are passing and the new laws.
New laws that will be coming out.
We have to abide by.
Yes. We monitor that very closely. Yes. Okay, so we're pretty much at our time again. Tanya will be sending out the calendar invites for these dates. If you're not able to make it, just let us know, or if you need a virtual link, let us know that as well. Again, any agenda items you would like to be considered, we'll send you the fentanyl. And then that's it.
Did everybody sign in?
And once again, thank you all for being here. Grab some water if you're right home. I'm going to turn off the recorder real quick.